Chair Champions.
We are the best at sitting in a comfy chair and telling the entire sports world what they should have done and what they should be doing later. Putting it simply, everybody, welcome to the Armchair Champions. I am Jason Walker.
And I'm Evan Hall.
And we've got everything in the sports world for you, so just sit back like a champ and we'll take care of everything for you. Maybe get yourself a drink. Whatever you prefer. I don't know if you prefer alcoholic drinks or maybe a nice Mountain Dew. You know, we live in Utah, so go a little crazy.
Something sweet and refreshing, at least.
Sweet and refreshing.
Have your butler bring it around.
Your butler. All right, so speaking of sweet and refreshing, we've got the Major League Baseball playoffs.
Yes.
Some exciting stuff. I know yesterday there was some really exciting. My Giants, well, that happened. They lost.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's only one part of the team that really is to blame. I don't think it's the whole of the Giants, so.
Still lost.
True. But, yeah, so we do have that.
Yeah. But still, I'm not too upset about it because, again, I don't follow baseball very closely. It's not like if the Patriots or Jazz had blown something like that, I'd still be moping and may not have shown up to
I would have had to record this by myself. Yeah. It's not even my show.
So we've got one more game in the Division League.
Yeah.
It's the NLDS Game 5, the Los Angeles Dodgers at Washington.
Yeah, so this is so we go back to Game 4. Dodgers had to pitch Clayton Kershaw in short rest, which was a tough decision to make considering that they now have questions, or there at least were questions about who would start Game 5. Currently, they're going with Rich Hill, who lost Game 2 at Washington as well. So he's going back to the stadium he just played at where he had some struggles, obviously. And, you know, the only other pitcher that they could really have – I mean, the Dodgers announced he would be the pitcher. And the only other, I guess, fresh – starter that they could if they needed to replace him with is a rookie. So it's a tough position pitching wise for the Dodgers. You look over to the Nationals and they've got Matt Scherzer. Sorry, let me make sure I'm Scherzer, who's coming in to play, coming in to pitch. He's had a good season. He's a 20 game winner, not a bad ERA. So I think pitching, definitely I'm going to give it to the Nationals on this. They're also home. And I think they win this one.
So you think the Nationals are going to pull it out?
Yeah, I think they will, just because I, with the Dodgers, they've had to use too much of their resources up too quickly in terms of the bullpen. But that's kind of the name of the game right now in the – National League. You look at the other NLDS series with the Cubs and Giants, and I mean, you know, really, as we all have remembered, I guess for the past every even year, the Giants find a way to pull out a World Series, which is kind of incredible. But if you're not a Giants fan, it's like mind-numbingly painful because you just know no matter how. Barely they squeak into the playoffs, they'll still like flip a switch come October. But that series, you know, we're talking about pitching. That series, I don't know, I feel I can blame the Giants' woes on their pitching. I mean, you look at Game 4 and Game 3. Game 3, the Giants did win, but I think they had the lead at one point late in the game and then blew a save. And then you go up to Game 4, and they blow another save in the ninth. So it is bullpen issues, and it is finding a better closer for next year. But that seems to be, like I said, the name of the game when it comes to the National League is pitching. The better bullpens and the better starting rotations are going to win the pennant this year. And that's just how I've seen it so far.
Okay. So what are your predictions on, let's just say, the World Series in general, combining with the AL as well as the NL?
Yeah.
Who do you think will pull it out?
I mean, I'm rooting for one of the particular teams, but
I guess that's true.
I don't want to jinx anything. But I will say, unless whoever wins the National League makes sure that their bullpen is in top shape, I think it's going to go to the AL, one of the AL teams. Right now, for the American League, that's going to be a good series because they both teams have been on rest because both teams swept the first round. And you've got a really great Blue Jays team and a surprisingly good Cleveland Indians team. So that's going to be a tough series. I don't think that'll be a sweep at all. I think that's going to probably be a seven game series. So there's a lot of offense over in the AL. There's a lot of good pitching in the National League. And so I think for the National League team and for a certain National League team, it's about making sure that your pitching staff is top notch. So
it's going to be a battle of defense and offense come the World Series, you think?
I think so. It'll be exciting. Okay.
Well, that's definitely nice. And like I said, I may not be a baseball follower, but I cannot ignore the Major League Baseball playoffs. So for me, it is always interesting. And I usually try and sit down and watch something. And, baseball is America's pastime.
Well, yeah, and we've been treated to some really good playoffs in the past few years. I mean, even the Royals winning one, it's like, anything is possible now.
Anything's possible.
Anything.
Well, speaking of anything's possible, although not really, Utah State football. So, and I guess the anything's possible.
Any disappointment is possible.
Yeah, any disappointment is possible. I was thinking they were going to pull it out against Colorado State. I was relatively confident. And yet again, Utah State just failed.
Yeah.
This is now 3-in-a-row conference. And again, the Boise State game, we were all expecting to lose. But against Air Force and Colorado State, fans believe they should have won that
game. Yeah, those were easily winnable games.
Yeah, and we really should have won both of them. And 2 weeks ago, we were both on the show, we talked about Matt Wells and about how his head was kind of on the chopping block. 2 weeks later, I've shifted more towards becoming more and more skeptical of Matt Wells. I'm still not on the fire him now train. Yeah. I don't expect I'll be unless I see something completely boneheaded from him. But I made the point that we're going to see how Matt Wells is going to build his program now that Gary Anderson's guys aren't really here anymore. And there may be a handful because there's some guys that might stick around for 5, 6, or even 7 years depending on crazy circumstances.
Yeah. But, I mean, we go back to how he lost his coaching staff over the past year.
And these are reasons why I don't believe he should just be fired now. Hmm. Because when you look at his past two seasons, he went 6-7 last year, and he went 2-4 this year. Now, there's a lot of things that do play into that, injuries, coaching losses. But the guy is now 7-11. Slurpee?
Yeah.
In the last 2 years?
Yeah, and I think I'm at the point of this, at least just last week's game against Colorado State, just kind of scratching my head at that. Because you saw who Colorado State lost to, and it was like Wyoming and Colorado, and I think it was somebody else. But, we should have won that game, and I'm just kind of confused,
Yeah, for the program that Utah State fans have been expecting Utah State to be over the last few seasons, the expectation was set by Gary Anderson, especially after 2012 when he went 11-2 and finished 16th in the AP poll. We were thinking, okay, now we're on the way to being a mid-major program, something like that. You're not necessarily going to
at least a ranked team.
Yeah, ranked team. Get in the rankings every now and again. Be able to finish near 10 wins. You're never really going to win a national title, but still be in contention, get to bowls every year.
But and the conference championship.
Yeah, be in the race for a conference championship.
They've won their division, and they've made it on a couple of occasions, at least, to the Mountain West Championship. So it's those expectations aren't, in my opinion, unfounded, because I think they were possible.
Yeah, and based on those expectations, Utah State had no business losing to Colorado State.
Oh, yeah.
They're just not a good program. But at this point, neither is Utah State. And as I was thinking to myself, being bitter and being a fan, I thought to myself, you know, the way Utah State has played this year, they deserve to be 2-4. I know when I was watching the game, I was in the student center here watching the game, and some of the commentators, they were saying that both coaches said they're better than their record. Well, at this point, I'm just going to say Utah State's not better than their record. They are what they are. They've shown they're not good enough to beat even middling to below middling teams. And it's frustrating because the expectations were this team could go win 7, possibly even 8 games if things fall their way. They're going to get lucky to find 5 wins this season the way they're going. It's hard to find another guaranteed win on the schedule. I don't even think there is one.
Yeah.
And so it's really frustrating. And let me list off some numbers and things that are really frustrating for Utah State fans. It has to do with scoring by quarter. So in the first quarter, Utah State has outscored their opponents 52-27. Second quarter, they've been outscored 30-34. In the third quarter, and this is where it gets extremely frustrating, they've been outscored 20-45. And they've been scoreless in the third quarter since they kicked a field goal halfway through the third quarter against Arkansas State. And those were the only points they scored in that game in the third quarter.
That sounds like a stamina problem. To me, I mean, that's a team that must be tired.
Yeah, it's
in the second half.
Yeah, it could be conditioning. Or another thing, really, because you see them also getting outscored in the fourth quarter, although they do score more points in the fourth quarter than in the second. But I think it has a lot to do with halftime adjustments. As a coach, that's one of the things, is that when you're winning, like against Colorado State, they're up 24-10. Against Arkansas State, they were up. And you let them outscore you in the second half. That's not making correct halftime adjustments, because you can't go into the locker room and say, hey, we're up 24-10, let's do the exact same things we were doing then.
Or at least wait until the fourth quarter to start producing it again.
Yeah. But when you're going up against Colorado State, Colorado State says, all right, we're down 24-10. Let's do something different. Let's switch things up. And it's not like they go to some drastic change in game plan. They just say, this is what we're seeing. Let's adjust this, this, and this. They come out and they do that, and Utah State's trying to do the same thing, run the same defensive coverages, run the same offensive plays, and then they get outscored 21-0 in the second half. That's what happens. And that, my friend, is coaching. And there could be some stamina problems, but I do think some of it has to do with halftime adjustments and perhaps player mentality. Because you can't blame everything on the coaches, because they probably are at least trying to make halftime adjustments. They might just not be working. I just wonder, is Utah State... I don't think Utah State has a winning mentality that when you're up 24-10 at halftime, they don't play like the game is 0-0. They play like they're up 78-0. Kind of like Michigan, except that was the end of game score. And so I'm going on a rant of epic proportions right now. But it's just really frustrating to see a team that can't finish games when they start out. You look at 52 points in first quarters.
Well, I mean, also another thing, you look at some of the individual stats. And take, for instance, like rushing yards. I mean, we had Devontae Mays, who was going to be really great. He could still be really great, but he got injured.
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't remember how many weeks ago exactly that was.
Yeah, and the last injury report I saw just says he's undetermined or some word like that for the next game. Yeah.
Well, it's like, okay, so he's been out for a number of weeks by now. Like I said, I can't remember exactly how much. But, you know, after all, half a season through, his 234 rushing yards is still second best on the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys should be having double those rushing yards at least by now, you know.
And most of the 200 yards was one game.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's like 1 week, and then everything else. The guy ahead of him, Lindsey, He's at 352. But, I mean, if an injured guy still is, like, second best halfway through the season and he hasn't played in weeks and might not play who knows when, I think there's some rushing issues at least.
Yeah, that is something that, again, we've talked about before, and I've mentioned it on the pregame show, that Utah State is having a really hard time rushing the ball up the middle. And against Colorado State, they're actually doing a little better, but they also included Kent Myers in their run game. And that's something that really helped them, is that Kent Myers was running around the field, and that's what helped them build a 24-10 lead, was the legs of Kent Myers. And that's something they hadn't been doing as much, it felt like, in previous games. They hadn't either tried it or weren't successful at it. But then in the second half, they weren't able to run the ball. And when you have a 24-10 lead, running the ball becomes super important because you got to kill that clock. And if you can't kill the clock, you can't play a second half lead running game, then, again, you get outscored by 21 points in the third and fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And the defense does take its fair share of blame for the 21 points after they held the offense to 10 points.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Whatever they got to do, they got to figure it out really quickly, to say the least, because when they come back from their bye, you know, I mean, they've got Fresno. They could probably win that. But, you know, you got San Diego State. You go to Wyoming, which, you know, I thought that would have been an easy one to call. But after losing to a team that lost to Wyoming pretty big, you know, that the doubt is creeping in. And, you know, you've got New Mexico, Nevada, and then you end at BYU. And at least the BYU game. I mean, if the rest of the season tanks, at least win that one.
Yeah, that would make a lot of things better for Utah State fans.
I'd excuse this whole season for that win. But yeah, I mean, it's not an easy schedule anymore. And this was the time, this was the part of the season, really, to pad your record with some of these teams. Like, I mean, obviously they beat Arkansas State and Weber, but, you know, could have been 4-2 at this point and still be looking at, there's a chance to win the division and at least contend for conference title.
Yeah. But, you know, going into the Colorado State game, we were saying this on the pregame show that it was a must-win game. And now that they've lost that game, things are really starting to tank on the season. They're 2-4. And again, we just went over the schedule. Things aren't nearly as easy as we thought they would be, just like you were saying. So, I know I saw this one tweet that really explained how Utah State fans felt. And this was after the Boise game, let alone after the Colorado State game. And it basically showed one of those industrial-sized dumpster things with the fire in it. It's a dumpster fire of a season at this point.
Yeah, at best it's bewildering given the trajectory I think the team was on. I don't really know what to say, because it's like Colorado State should have been a win. Air Force was a good shot to win. You know, and two games would have put them in a much, just two different games that had turned out differently should have, you know.
Yeah, this whole season, we would totally look at this season differently. Yeah. We'd be all on top of the world.
Yeah. Well, even with Boise State, you know, 21-10, that's a couple of scores. I mean, yeah, that's a lot in a football game, but that's not impossible, you know. Yeah. 21-10, that's, you have a solid quarter. You're back in that game.
Yeah, that's a two-possession game.
Yeah.
All it takes is two drives to,
yeah,
to get in front.
So it's like really the only absolutely, in my opinion, maybe the absolutely only unwinnable game was USC. But even then, you know, there's some people who may debate how bad of a game that could have or should have been.
Yeah, I know. I was talking to Ethan. I believe it was Ethan. He was just saying we just didn't have a game plan.
Yeah, that was him. It was just, it looked like they didn't know what they were doing out there.
Yeah. And so this team isn't bad. There's just lack of discipline, There's some coaching issues with having lost coaches and the fact that Matt Wells isn't seeming like he can make halftime adjustments properly. The team, like I said, they're not disciplined and they're not coming out of halftime fired up and playing like the game is tied 0-0.
Well, it's just these late surges just aren't going to be enough. I mean, you go to the Air Force game and their late touchdown.
Yeah, it meant nothing.
It made the game look better on paper, but it's like when that's the last play or two or a few of the game or the last drive or whatever, it's just a little too late.
Yeah.
You know, and that seems to have been kind of a theme because they have a really bad third quarter and try to and slightly come back in the fourth, but it's just not cutting it, you know?
Yeah, and really, if you exclude the Weber State game, things look even worse in the third and fourth quarter. They had have scored 10 points in the third quarter, and let me tell you where those points came from. A meaningless touchdown against USC, and that field goal I mentioned earlier against Arkansas State. And they'd have also been outscored in the fourth quarter 44-24, outscored by 20 points in the fourth quarter. Now, you can probably also throw out USC as an outlier, and so those numbers wouldn't look quite as bad. But
well, I mean, a few years ago, they went to USC.
Yeah, and they really took it to them. And
yeah.
They didn't quite win, but they were in
that
game.
That was a much more competitive game, yeah, and you know.
And could have won that game. I think some argue that they should have. So really, a lot of fans have probably given up on the season and are now looking forward to next season, and you wonder, what do we have going next season? And really, you have Kent Myers, who should be back for, I believe, his final year. Rashad Lewis, he's been perhaps the lone bright spot. He's now leading the team in receptions and in yards.
As a true freshman.
Yeah, a true freshman. Yeah. And so if you can get this guy for 3 or 4 years, I would assume he stays for 4 unless he gets good enough that he wants to go to the NFL. But you're going to have a good receiver on your hands for several years.
Yeah, don't waste that receiver.
Yeah, don't waste it. Kent Myers is serviceable as a quarterback. He is kind of falling lower and lower. There's a lot of hype for him coming into the season, and he's played solid. I have not been disappointed, but it's not as good as I would have hoped, but I might have unrealistic expectations.
And then is Devontae Mays coming back?
This is his senior year, unless for some reason he gets a medical redshirt, which I don't think he will, then he's not coming back.
That's too bad, because that's a healthy Devontae Mays. You know, you look at some of these point differences, what he could have
What he could have done for the running game, and it's more than just points. It's completely balancing out the offense to the point where Kent Myers, we don't have to rely on his arm and his legs.
Yeah.
We actually have another guy who can run the ball.
Because you have a great couple of receivers.
Yeah.
And you would have, with Mays and Lindsay, a couple of good rushers.
Yeah, because Lindsay's not a bad backup rusher, and he's a good change of pace back, because Devontae Mays, downhill runner, doesn't do a ton of cutting.
Yeah.
Tony Lindsay Jr., that's about all he does, which is good if it's balanced with other runners. But it by itself, when you only have guys like Kent Myers and Tony Lindsay and Luan Hunt, who that's basically all they are, these juking kind of runners, then that's not nearly as good as having a power runner in the mix.
Yeah.
So, all right. Moving on to the NBA. We're going to leave this depressing scene and go to another slightly depressing scene.
But yet more hopeful.
Yes, more hopeful, thankfully. So the Utah Jazz, they have a injury on hand, a very unfortunate one. Gordon Hayward dislocated and broke his finger in a practice last week. And the story that I heard is that he caught it in the practice jersey things that they have, the little mesh jersey things. They may not have cheap mesh things, but yeah, caught in one of those and dislocated and broke it. Broke his finger on his left hand. I believe it was his ring finger is what I heard.
I wonder what he would have been.
It was some finger.
Doing, like catching a chest pass, like, you know.
Well, it got caught in somebody else's jersey.
Huh. Okay.
And I don't know exactly what that looks like. Maybe he was just coming off, and maybe his hand caught the underside. You can imagine 1,000 different situations yeah, it'd be on something how crazy. He got his finger caught. But the fact of the matter is, he's out 6 weeks, and the math figures out to somewhere around 15 to 20 games. Mm. Most people are saying about 20 games, and that is, you know, 1/4 of the season. So, again, that's slightly depressing, but the Jazz were built to be able to withstand this kind of injury. The biggest thing that we've been talking about, and anybody's been talking about who's covering the Jazz, is depth, 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 versatility, depth, 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 and more depth. And Dante Exum. And whether or not Gordon Hayward will stay.
Well, I mean, I would agree to that for the most part. I mean, you look at last year, you know, points per game. He clocked in at just under 20 points per game. But you also have people, or at least last year, you had people like Derek Favors and Rodney Hood and Alec Burks putting up, you know, the double digits a game, which I think helps. But
it helps, but you got to find. He was injured for a lot of the season, so he wasn't there.
Yeah, and so, you know, if they can get somebody to step up at least closer to the 20 point per game level.
Yeah,
or at least, you know.
The thing is that I don't know if the Jazz have anybody who can score that many points. They might for a short period. You look at a guy like Rodney Hood who will either score 20 points or 5, depending on the night. You'd like to see some guys step up, but Gordon Hayward has been the offense for the Utah Jazz for the past 3 years. He's been the guy. And one of the concerns for the Jazz, even with Gordon Hayward, was can these guys score? They have the slowest pace by far. It's embarrassing whenever you see graphs of pace. And you have the Warriors up there at number one, clear number one. You go down the list and you have everybody else. Then you have the Jazz who are like 10 behind everybody else as far as pace. I could go up and down the court with them and I'm fat and slow and get tired after two times going up and down the court.
Yeah.
And so you wonder, nearly 20 points a game for Gordon Hayward, can that be made up?
Yeah, I mean, you look at also the impact he has. He's second on the team in assists per game with almost 4. So that's at least, you know, 8 points because of him getting the ball to somebody else as well. So that's it's not just scoring, but it's also setting up other players to score as well.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of things that go into the impact that he has for this team. Now, I did a little bit of research because I wanted to see how the Jazz have done without Gordon Hayward in games, and I also looked at his on-the-court, off-the-court stats. But first, in the last 3 years, the Jazz are 7-6 without Gordon Hayward, which isn't bad. And their point differential, which is slightly deceptive, it's plus 33. And I'll tell you why it's deceptive, because in 2013-14, they were 2-3 and minus 5 in point differential. In 2014-15, they were 3-3 with a minus. Yeah, they were 3-3 with a minus 3 point differential. That's a lot of threes. And then in 2015-16, they were 2-0 without him, and they had a plus 41 point margin. So it's really that it was that one win against Phoenix that they had last year without Gordon Hayward when they blew him out by 34. Without that, they'd be minus 1. And so really, you see the Jazz going about 500 without Gordon Hayward, and that's on teams that don't have as much depth as the Jazz do now. And so you'd like to see the Jazz, and they've got a bit of a rough schedule to start with, you'd like to see them go above 500 at the very least.
True.
But perhaps even trying to match the expectations of 50 wins. There's fans out there that are going for 50 wins. And that's a lot less likely now without Gordon Hayward for about 20 games. But you're still looking at the mid-40s for the Jazz.
Although I would say, you know, you look at the Northwest Division. And, I mean, they got to watch out for a good Timberwolves team that's kind of on the rebuild.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean.
Yeah, they're looking at the ceiling, really, for me, is the 3 seed. And the floor is 7th or 8th seed. I don't see them not getting into the playoffs unless something goes absolutely disastrously wrong.
And then obviously you've got like a Golden State and a San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, so they're going to be 1-2 above the Jazz most likely. But again, looking at the Jazz without Gordon Hayward, looking at the plus minus, in general, when he's on the court, they're better at most everything. You know, there's, and the things that go down, like the effective field goal percentage, it goes down by 0.005. Very marginal difference. But things like assist percentage, block percentage, they go up. Turnover percentage goes down. The offensive rating for the Jazz goes up. And then for the opponent, a lot of their percentages go down when he's on the court. And so you can tell that Gordon Hayward, he obviously makes an impact for the Jazz positively and obviously negatively for the opponent. He's the Jazz's most important player, and you can argue whether or not he's their best player, but he's their most important player because that's just the nature of wing players nowadays. Because you can make the very legitimate argument that Derek Favors is the best player on the Jazz, but Gordon Hayward is the most important because he does so much for this team. Now, the question is, who's going to step up? You mentioned Rodney Hood, Alec Burks. Those are two guys. I would love to see Rodney Hood step up and score 20 points per game through this stretch when Gordon Hayward's out. And we've seen Rodney Hood step up when Gordon Hayward's not played. He's been able to step up and have solid games and produce and be a scorer. And he's really been a surprise and a definite steal for the Jazz when they got him with the 20-something pick. Another guy, and I believe this is the guy who would be starting for in place of Gordon Hayward, is Joe Johnson. He's probably, he's really only second to George Hill as far as best acquisition in the offseason. And he was starting for Miami and playing really well for them, scoring 13, 14 points a game and shooting well. And so you see him come in, make a positive impact for the Jazz as a starter, and be able to help the Jazz coast. And then another guy you might see is Alec Burks, who, if he's healthy and, you know, pray to whatever gods or voodoo you worship, that Alec Burks stays healthy, and that way the Jazz can somehow survive this, because they've managed to do whatever they've done the last two seasons with Alec Burks missing more than half the games in each season. And so if he's actually healthy, he might actually make a positive impact. So,
hopefully.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's time to panic at all, though, for the Jazz. I think they have, still have a very solid team.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think, a middling playoff spot, I think, is what they will do, in my opinion, given what they've produced so far.
Yeah, and that is, that's where the smart money is. You look at 4 through 6, probably 5 or 6. If they're lucky, they'll get home court advantage. So,
and you know, and then at that point, if you know you're middle of the pack, you're not being paired up with a wildly different team. You know, in term, you know, if you're not a lower seed, then obviously you're not going to be paired up with a really, really good team like Golden State, at least in the first round, you know.
Yeah, so. If you end up with that 4 or 5 seed, you're going to be playing either the 4 or the 5 seed, or if you're 6, you'll be playing 3. So that would be a good spot, and you give the chance for the Jazz to win their first playoff series since I can't even remember when. I think the last time I remember the Jazz winning a playoff series, I think they beat Denver or Houston? I can't even
remember. Which would have been a while
ago. Yeah, that was a while ago. Last time either
with
of those
Denver,
guys
at least.
The playoffs. It would have been like 2008, 2009. This was back when Deron Williams was still on the team. Because last time they made the playoffs without Deron Williams, which I believe has only been once, they got swept by the Spurs. That was kind of a coming out party for Derek Favors because he had a good series. In spite of the fact that they got their butts kicked in about every single game. So that's the Utah Jazz situation. Unfortunately, that news was, it really bummed me out, the fact that he's going to be out.
Yeah.
Especially because he's really been durable throughout his season. or throughout his career, not just the season. He's played in a lot of games, and now he's going to miss some time.
Lesson, don't grab onto somebody else's practice jersey or whatever.
Yeah, if it turns out he's doing something stupid, like trying to tug on somebody's jersey or pull that dirty move, trying to pull somebody's shorts down, if I learned it was that, I might break his other finger.
Hopefully it was at least for diving for the ball or something heroic like that in practice.
He's like, oh!
Or just a poorly timed, you know, rebound.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. He was trying to rebound, and his hand went up and caught the jersey on the way up. And again, you can think of 1,001 different situations for this. Somebody should just ask him. Like, how did it happen?
That's what we ought to do. Next week, we ought to delay.
We'll get Gordon Hayward on the phone. So, how exactly did you break your finger?
Well, I tripped.
Can you at least try to play?
It's on his non-shooting hand. I mean, just
there's hope yet.
Just put a little wrap on it. Isn't Jason Pierre-Paul playing with half a hand?
Something like that. I mean, I've heard of,
like, he blew most of his
some
hand
crazy off people playing with broken things before, you know. And so,
you know, Jason Pierre-Paul blew half his hand off with a firework.
At least now that's stupid. Now
that was stupid. Get your hand caught in somebody's jersey. Okay, we can live with that. Blow your hand off with a firework.
Yeah,
stupid. So, speaking of NFL.
Speaking of stupid, what do we have on?
Well, speaking of not very good.
Okay.
Colin Kaepernick. He was named the starter for the 49ers next game against the Bills. So, 1 week after we talked about what was going to happen after he went to the 49ers, he's getting his chance. But some circumstances did come around that allowed for him to start. Because one of the things that was keeping him from starting more than really anything else, I believe, was his contract. Because if they played him and he got injured, they would have been on the hook for a lot of money next year. They couldn't have just cut him and then let him go on his merry way and sign with somebody else.
Or even as we were talking about last week, even just not starting or playing and all that money.
Yeah.
So even if it's not about getting cut or leaving, that's still a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. He's the highest paid backup quarterback, although not anymore. He was the highest paid backup quarterback and like the 19th highest paid player in the league. It's ridiculous. But they reworked his contract. It wiped out essentially the last 4 years of his contract, and he has a player option at the end of this year. And I believe he's probably going to take it unless he has, you know, unless he wants to be a hero and try and go somewhere else. If he's going to make a business decision, you know, like Cam Newton or Matt Ryan, then he's going to take the $14.5 million player option that he's got for this next year and try and stay in San Francisco. Even though I would strongly recommend the 49ers to draft a quarterback, especially if they manage to get their hands on the number one pick. But they'll be fighting the Browns dearly to get that number one pick.
Well, yeah, and plus one part of the contract that they revamped was that if he leaves, they don't get another pick in the draft as compensation either. So,
not that I think it would be worth anything.
Yeah, but, you know, at least having the extra shot at picking somebody.
You know, that sixth-round pick, there's this guy named Tom Brady. The Patriots drafted in the sixth round back about 16 years ago. I'm not sure how that pick worked out.
It's supposed to be Drew Bledsoe's backup, but then beat him out
Be a backup for a few years, cut him, and then move on to the next guy. Yeah, Hall of Fame quarterback. Tony Romo was undrafted. Did you know that? He's an undrafted quarterback.
Hmm.
Quite a success story.
Yeah, I remember what's his name on the Rams and Cardinals once played in the Arena Football League.
That's his really?
Kurt Warner, yeah.
He was in the Arena Football League?
Yeah, briefly. Very briefly.
That. Well, I like Kurt Warner. He's a really cool guy.
Yeah.
In spite of the fact that he had a reality TV show that flopped. Well, I saw a commercial for it and never saw it again. So that's how I know it flopped.
But at least a decent guy nonetheless. Yeah.
And he won a Super Bowl. But I do not regret the Patriots beating him in that one Super Bowl against the Rams. So, Colin Kaepernick. Back to Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
Sadly, we do have to talk about this because I'd love to talk Kurt Warner and Tom Brady and basically everything else in the NFL, but this is the most interesting thing. And do you think that he's actually going to play good? Do you think that he's actually going to redeem himself?
I don't know, because, I mean, even without him, that's a low-producing offense in terms of yards per game and per play.
Yeah, they've got
– I mean
– they've got no wide receivers.
Yeah. I mean, that's a low – like I said, low-producing offense anyway. And I just don't know how much more this brings back. Because there's even talk about whether he's even a good fit for the coach, Kelly.
Yeah, for Chip Kelly.
Yeah, and his style of coaching.
I wonder who is a good fit for Chip Kelly. Yeah, and I do believe that he's not nearly as good as he was back in San Francisco. He had those couple years where he was good, and there's this big old debate, you know, Colin Kaepernick, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, RG3 for a little while, and then slowly RG3 is faded into the distance. He's now playing for the Browns, which is the kiss of death. I don't know if it's actually a kiss, it's just the death strike.
I'm waiting for them to call me to go out and throw for them.
Ring, ring, ring.
Yes,
ring.
It's time.
Hello, Mr. Evan Hall. This is the Cleveland Browns.
Yes!
We want you to come play quarterback for us this week. And seriously, they have nobody to play quarterback for them this week. They probably could call you.
12th man becomes, becomes the quarterback for a day.
You're better than Colin Kaepernick.
It's like a Make-A-Wish Foundation wish, except I'm not sick or anything.
I want to play quarterback.
All right.
For the Browns.
Why not?
I'm sorry, child. You want to play play quarterback for the Cleveland Browns?
Your health is already, impaired.
Your brain's shot. You have a terrible dream.
Well, I mean, look at the 49ers. They're 1-4 at this point.
They're going downhill. I mean, they had that win against the Rams, which is seeming like more and more of an anomaly considering the Rams' upward trajectory since that game and the 49ers' downward trajectory since that game. It's really weird. I was really weirded out by how the Rams went on a three-game winning streak.
The Rams are doing all right,
They were in first place in the division. I still don't know how that happened. But I agree with you. I don't think that Kaepernick's really going to have any success. I'm still looking toward his next job if he gets another one. He's going to bounce around the league for a while because
Maybe Browns.
Maybe the Browns. I wouldn't bet against it.
He and the 8 other people who've been quarterbacks for them for the past year and a half.
Year and a half in the last 60 over the past 5 years. They've started a quarterback for almost every single game they've played. But yeah, I do think that he's going to bounce around as a backup at the very least, because you see the same guys as backups bouncing around all over the place. I mean, Brian Hoyer started for about 5 different teams. I think he was on the Patriots at one point. I think that's where he started, was he's a backup for Tom Brady. Then he goes to the Browns. He went to the Steelers at one point, I think. Now he's with the Bears. I think there was 3 other teams that he bounced around. He might have even played for the Cardinals. But he's just gone everywhere. And so you see these same backups jumping around. You see their names pop up. It's just the way it is. So I think Colin Kaepernick is good enough to where teams will sign him to be their backup. Because he's not an abysmal quarterback.
Yeah.
And if you say he's abysmal, then I'll just tell you, well, so are all the rest of the backup quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, who's the best backup quarterback in the NFL right now?
A starting quarterback.
Yeah. I would probably say maybe Jimmy Garoppolo. Colin Kaepernick's probably the best backup quarterback in the NFL right now. You can probably make that argument. Yeah. You can also maybe say Brian Hoyer because he's doing pretty well. But look at the backups. Colin Kaepernick would be the cream of the crop for backup quarterbacks. He's a borderline starter. And now you got Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Bradford. They'll be fighting for their stuff whenever Teddy Bridgewater comes back.
Yeah, but that's a good battle to have.
Yeah, that is a really good battle, although I would go with Sam Bradford the way things have been going. And that's another anomaly of the NFL is that if you would have told me after five weeks the Vikings would be undefeated and be the only undefeated team, I would have probably been like, you're good.
Well, and then also it took till last week for the Eagles not to be undefeated.
Yeah.
That's another surprising thing that I like personally. It's kind of nice to see the Eagles doing well.
But yeah, it's nice for me to see two teams that aren't normally the best teams. Yeah. You know, obviously I want the Patriots to do good, but to see other teams not up to par. You know, the Packers and the Seahawks and everybody else who's been killing the NFC for a while, they're not there. It's the Vikings.
It is all the NFC because, I mean, Rams are doing fantastic or at least good.
Yeah.
Decent. And then you've got – I mean, the Minnesota Vikings, they did well last year as well.
They're only 9-7 though, so –
Yeah, I mean, at least when it came to the NFC North, which
they did win the division.
Yeah, in a head to head with
Packers,
the Packers, and then obviously Eagles. You know, I would never have thought the Eagles would be that good. So it's a weird thing going on in the NFC, and it's really screwing up my picks every week.
I've been doing pick leagues.
That's why I'm not beating Ethan is because of the NFC.
Yeah, well In my little weird pick'em league thing, and if you go to powerrankingsandmore.com, you'll see our predictions league thing that we do. This week I just kind of went more on, kind of upset maybe. I chose teams that I wouldn't necessarily just say, this guy has a better record, I'm going with them. I picked a couple upsets. Although I picked an upset last week, I picked the 49ers over the Cardinals. Oops.
Yeah.
That was a moronic decision. But hey, I thought Drew Stanton. Good can he be?
Well, and I mean, it was a faltering Cardinals team.
Yeah, and so
against
equally
panicky 49ers. So,
but hey, Blaine Gabbert sucks. But anyway, so the one last thing before we end, talk about Colin Kaepernick. I think a lot of people are saying that Colin Kaepernick is distracted, might be distracted by this protest. And there's a lot of things going on to where you can say Colin Kaepernick might not be good because people are saying he's lost weight and he hasn't done anything since 2013 to show that he's actually gotten better. And he's been on a slow decline ever since 2013 when he went 12-4. Because then he went 8-8, they went 2-6 as a starter. And obviously he hasn't started a game until now. And
yeah.
But I think if anything, I think he's more motivated. I hope.
I think it seems that way.
Yeah, because he's going to go out there. And I remember seeing him when they were blowing out the Rams and when they sent him in. He looked like he was kind of fired up to get out there. He was ready to go. He was like, I'm going to go out there and do whatever for 5 plays. Because, again, his big thing is he wants to make a statement. He wants to have social change in the United States. And, again, I support his right to protest and promote change, which I believe needs to happen. You know, you can agree or disagree with the methods and all that stuff, but I do think that he'll be at least more motivated. We'll see if that motivates him to actually work hard, learn the playbook, practice hard. You know, these are the things that made Tom Brady, Peyton Manning great. And they're the things that have destroyed Colin Kaepernick's career because he didn't do them. Same with RG3. And he's also got to learn how to be a leader, something that's also destroyed the careers of Jay Cutler. I think, slowly eating away at the career of Kirk Cousins and other guys. So, and we'll see how 49ers do. They are playing the Bills, who are on a hot streak.
Yeah.
The other really surprising thing, I was about ready to say Rex Ryan was out the door, and then he beats the Cardinals, Patriots, and the Rams.
Huh. That's not a bad – that's a pretty good run.
He's turning it around. And so we'll see what happens this week in the NFL. And thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been Armchair Champions. You can find me on Twitter at TheJaywalk67. Where can they find you on Twitter, Evan?
EvanHall62.
All right. And there you have it. Thanks again for listening to Armchair Champions. Peace out, everybody.